but everywhere.
Senior Focus. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Currie. I'm your presenter for this edition of Senior Focus. Kia ora tātou. So welcome, everyone, and it's Matariki, and I guess more and more information about what Matariki's about is now out in the media, is now discussed, it's on the news, and I think each year happens in the, with the public holiday, there's more in the celebrations, there's a richness, a tapestry of being able to tune in to what the Māori astronomy is about, what the star cluster represents to Māori, and what learning and what processes we can undertake at this time. It is a time of reflection and remembrance. And certainly with new publications coming out, I'm thinking of Atua Wahine, which is a magnificent book by Hana Tapiata. And I would really recommend you dipping into that. And it is the sort of book you can dip into chunks of, and you don't have to try and read it like a novel. But it's got a splendid unpacking of the feminine spiritual deities, the processes that woman could tap into in the old days within Māoridom, and it's kind of revitalized and presented for people who live in the 21st century. So it's quite amazing weaving this book, because it draws on so many aspects of things that I'd met 10, 20, 30 years ago, but I'm seeing them in a different light. So I would really recommend, if anyone wants to be more tuned into Matariki, that they get hold of this book, Atua Wahine. And it's written in English, but it's also pepper-potted with, richly with Māori text and Māori references, and there's a fabulous appendix at the back with all sorts of reference material, human and paper. So it would really be a great starting point on a journey of discovery if you were really wanting to tune in. With the Matariki time, it's a time of weighing up. I guess it's a new year for Māori, but it's a time for thinking ahead, for planting seeds, and not just physically in the ground, but planting seeds about your direction, where you're going, what's on the horizon, what do you want to materialize in the next 5 years? What do you want to see come to fruition? I was reading about fundraising recently, and one of the questions was, what would you want for your not-for-profit if you had just an open capacity to be able to dream forward? You didn't have to worry about where the funding was coming from. What would you actually dream? What would be in your dream? What would you have that was the burning fire in your system that you'd want to see come to fruition? What would be the thing that would stand out the most? And I guess there's all sorts of wants that we have at various times, but sometimes when we look forwards or backwards, we can actually get a sense of what our place is in history, what our, you know, how amazing it is to be on the planet at this time. There are lots and lots of opportunities for learning and cross-fertilization from different people and different walks of life, different ways of looking at things. And all of this wasn't really possible in times gone by. People were very, very locked in rigidly to world views that didn't allow them any other view at all. And yet we can look at any worldview we like. We can go online and research. We can discuss with people on the other side of the world that we've never met. It's an extraordinary time to be alive. And given that, and given I think that Māori were very effective strategic thinkers, and many of them had not just 5-year or 10-year plans, but some had 25-year plans. And Whatawhiniata, when he returned from the US, where he'd had a very top job as a professor of accounting in a very prestigious university, when he came back to New Zealand, and he didn't have to come back. I mean, he chose to come back because he felt it was his time to give to his people. But when he arrived back, he had a vision. He looked at the and surveyed where Ngāti Raukawa were on the west coast of the North Island, centred in Ōtaki, north of Wellington, and he thought about different development plans and different things that could be done, but he saw that the health of the people was critical. He saw that somehow the strong connection with alcohol that had developed, that was not really originally part of Māori life at all. Māori were one of the few peoples on the planet who never produced alcohol and never focused on alcohol and had never met alcohol until Europeans brought it here. So for him, that had to be number one. It had to be a really strong plan in place to reduce the dependency on alcohol, to change the alcohol harm stats for his people. And coupled with that, there had to be interest in what was happening in the smoking area, because there was such a high proportion of Māori women who were dying, and dying really comparatively young, in their 40s and 50s. But he also saw that it's very difficult to change things without education. You had to lift the spirit and you had to lift the mind. So te reo was the lever to produce that change, actually creating Māori dimensions of learning. And why couldn't we have a Māori university? Why couldn't we? There was no blueprint for one. There was no funding. But it started with will and vision, and many people came in and taught for free, many people gifted and supported. And it was through that process of community building, and it was resilience building, because there was no resourcing, because it was all done on araha and on faith. But it was a catalyst, and a very powerful one, because once it got going, it became the dream of other iwi in other places. And the Wānanga o Aotearoa today is such a success, and with its online learning packages reaching the highest number of students in any institution in the country. And we can see how many Māori wānanga that are producing full-blown university degrees, PhDs, and contributing greatly to our understanding of science and ecology and the future under climate change. Many very urgent issues are being researched at the coalface, and people are being supervised, and the structure is working. So at times like this, at Matariki time, I think about the people who have left big legacies, like Whatawhiniata, and Rose Petty. She never had a university on the ground with bricks and mortar, but she is immortalised in so many conversations about so many hui where she taught, where she shared her spiritual insights. A most remarkable woman. And some of these people's teachings and writings are going to be an integral part of future Matariki events and celebrations, because we're going to draw on their knowledge and build on their strengths. I guess at this time, communities are finding ways of coming together and finding ways to share kai, because there are people suffering food shortages. There are people who are having housing crisis that will mean that they're moving around quite a lot, and so they're not well connected into community like they were. So mindful of all of that, there's still deep strengthening going on in a number of places around the country. So there's the tourist angle of Matariki, I guess, there's the opening up of dialogue and allowing more interaction with Pākehā, coming in on marae and learning and so on. But there's also very cogent business plans in place for economic development for different iwi and different hapu across the country. And the Māori economy is being celebrated now, something in the region of 2.8 billion per annum, but the potential is to probably double or treble that over the next 6 to 8 years. And these these plans I'm talking of that Runanga and Hapu have, they're being well constructed, and they're built on actual realities of understanding the potential of their land, what their whenua can return to them, and the strengths of using kaupapa Māori, of using a Māori way of approaching agriculture. Not doing things that introduce chemicals into the environment and into the water supply, but keeping things natural and looking at ways to utilise what nature provides anyway. So in just summarising, I think one of the things that excites me the most in the things that are going on around the country around this time of Matariki is the work that's going into planning gardens as being central to health. And it's the gardens that are attracting a lot of attention nowadays. Pākehā researchers are looking at some of the benefits that come through for older people being involved in gardening, where they can get support. So some of the heavy lifting and the heavy, literally, the heavy digging can be taken on board by younger people. And that can be part of even their rehab if they've been incarcerated, for example. They need supervision, and they need to be out in the community giving back, and this is a way that it can happen. But older people have great wisdom and great knowledge about gardening to pass on. And so being able to bring both parties together and provide structure. So all the thinking and decision-making doesn't have to land on people who would rather relax. So they can relax and enjoy what they're growing and the conversation. And their presence, just being in their presence, can be very strengthening for the young people. So there's benefits all around. These gardens are cropping up on Marae land, but they're cropping up also in retirement villages. They're cropping up on public land that's not been utilised. Land that's maybe been put aside for drainage or a potential railway line for the future. Just lying idle. And it's quite amazing how many bits and pieces of land there are and how much is available. It's nobody seems to run out. And then Gardens for Health is an actual initiative by the Ministry of Health, and they actually have a small team, and they provide tools and instruction and seeds, and they'll actually go out and work with groups. So it's quite amazing what is going on and what can go on, and this is kind of news that never makes the news. So we get inundated with the negative news on television each night, but there's a lot of positive news going on that we don't hear about, and that's part of the purpose of this program, is to bring some of that to you. We have had programs about the university working in this area, doing research on gardening. We've had some of the members of a group that's under research come and share with us, and we're going to have them again later on. I'm also keen to interview people who are working in on Mara in their own iwi and hapu land areas, and so I'm going to arrange to interview people in the future along these lines, just to give you on the ground flavour of what is actually happening. It's school holidays, and some people will be with their grandchildren. Some people will be FaceTiming with them on Facebook. Some people will be reading about what things children are facing growing up today. And when I saw the Herald yesterday and I saw the account of a parent who had been rung by the police and informed that her daughters had been online being groomed by a pedophile, and that she had given permission for them to create these accounts, and through these accounts this man had persuaded them to do some very unsavory acts, and of course under the threat that they were going to, you know, suffer some terrible consequences unless they complied. And the subtlety of it and the way it went on over a long period of time and why it wasn't detected by the mother is a very interesting story, and it shows how vulnerable the young people are around social media. And I know that for many people they immediately think, oh, well, why do we permit this? Why can't we just shut it all down? But not realising that the internet is a very difficult thing to control, and also with the kinds of situations that the young people are in, they get a lot of their support and their self-esteem built through connecting on the net in these various groups. So cutting them off from all of that isn't necessarily going to help them. It's a very difficult thing to sort out. And I understand the Australians are trying to bring in legislation to prevent young people under 16 being online and being in these accounts. But the actual impact of such legislation hasn't really been looked at yet. So it's not an open and closed question, and it's going to be a process that we will just have to watch and see how they deal with it, and we'll have to see what people come up who are researching it here. And in the meantime, if you know anybody who's gone through this, do be supportive of the parents, because they're the ones often the meat and the sandwich getting blamed when often they've done a lot. They haven't just let it happen. And they thought they were doing a good job. So it's quite devastating for them, actually, really devastating. And I just am relieved in a sense that I don't attempt to be bringing up children or being involved as a parent of a young child. I don't have that responsibility. I'm quite glad in a way, because the things I enjoyed doing with my children, that's, they're not things that are the only thing in the world now, and life has changed immensely. But we do need to have the capacity to listen to others, the capacity to have compassion, so we can extend ourselves and provide support at a time when people are feeling stretched and feeling judged and feeling vulnerable. And I think that for a lot of parents, they know their children have been harmed and they live with that, and it's a very difficult thing, because they know that their children have lost the ability to trust easily. They've had that taken away from them, and it takes a long time to heal and bring that back. So whether you have read that article in the press, you know, in the Herald yesterday or not, I'm quite sure that as you listen to people in the community, you will find that there are grandparents who are bringing up children and are struggling with this issue about supervising children online. Or your own son or daughter may be having this issue with their children. Or it may be your great-grandchildren. But it seems that you can't separate children from the internet today, so there's going to be a wide variety of responses and a wide variety of situations they find themselves in, and keeping them safe is a tough job. I'm very pleased to share with you that through some tremendous efforts, we've found that people have valued the show, and we've been able to receive koha from many different people who've been friends and supporting the program over the past year. And that's brought us to a point where I think we're almost at zero balance as we head towards our first invoice for July, which is the first of this financial year. And we are in the process of looking at funding and looking at funding issues and looking at going out to funders, telling our story, sharing some of the benefits that we get out of making the program and the stories that people tell us about how it benefits them. And we're always open to hearing from you. So do get in touch. Do use our Gmail, seniorfocus 104.6 FM at gmail.com. So I'll repeat that again. It's seniorfocus, all one word, lowercase, 104.6 FM at gmail.com. And any time you have any ideas at all, things you like to hear online, things you like us to be talking about, people you think we should talk to, just drop us a line, because we're very keen to hear from all our listeners. And don't forget, if you can't listen on a Sunday at 5:25, we are on podcast, so online you can find us 24/7. And you can also alert your friends wherever they are in Aotearoa or across the globe. It doesn't matter. They are able to go to the Planet website, planetaudio.org www.nz.nz/programs/senior focus, which is all one word, as I've said before, in the digital world anyway. And a fast way I have alerted people to is if you're picking up the program on your phone, if you're wanting to do it from your pocket or handbag, just use Google and pop in Senior Focus Auckland, and up will come a link where you can click on listen and you can hear the current program, or you can scroll down and you can choose one of the four podcasts that we've got of recent programs. Or you can go to the programs section on the Planet website and you can find our material that's archived under support. So we're very keen for people to click online and find us and enjoy programs. And sometimes I've re-listened to programs I've made some time ago, and I've used this as a way of motivating myself to do writing. I found it very useful. And a lot of research goes into the background of some of the programs that we make, and it can be useful to share with others. Other people have used it in submission writing. They've used it in having discussions where they meet with other seniors, and at libraries where they have seniors' coffee sessions and so on. It's a good thing to introduce and let people know about the program. I hope you're able to connect with some young people over the holiday break. I hope that you can enjoy some intergenerational dialogue and get some benefit from that. And whether you have grandchildren or not, it's a wonderful thing to be able to just hang out with people who are a different age group. And through listening and through engaging in conversation, you can just have such a breath of fresh air in your life and really celebrate that connection and that wonderful unfolding that happens where there's no other element in the transaction. There's no finance involved. There's no obligation involved. It's just an enjoyment. So, in summing up, it's time for us to wind down, and I'm thinking about what I'm going to be doing this time next week as I make the next program, and I've got 6 bookings ahead. So I thank you for listening, and you know there'll be some very interesting things coming up. Good afternoon.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
Once forgiven.